Well, good morning and welcome to episode 15 of the Business Blueprint. I'm your host, Joe Sandeen. And today I have a very special guest with me who might actually be the busiest person that we've ever had on the show. So this person, this very special person I'm talking about is Renee Forty. For over 20 years, Renee has been running Renee Forty State Farm in West Fargo. I was looking online before we got here. She has a whopping 468 Google reviews, and her average rating is 4.9 out of 5 stars. I thought that was pretty amazing.
Thank you.
She's a commercial real estate investor and developer as well, and she's also the owner of Whiskey Barrel Meats, a new butcher shop and smokehouse lounge in Mapleton, just off I-94. And I thought this was interesting. On her website, it states that most butcher shops don't have a reason to linger, and we built one. So I thought that was pretty cool. So I'll have to talk more about that later.
Absolutely.
And then in her spare time, Renee is a licensed pilot of all things.
I am.
So Renee, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
All right. So the first segment here, let's talk. I want to talk about real estate, or not real estate. I want to talk about your insurance business. So I want to kind of go back to the beginning. You know, I think people can see a successful business owner, but they don't always see all the years of work and risk and like everything it took. So I want you to just take us back to the beginning and kind of talk about what got you into insurance. Just kind of tell your origin story a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was 23 years old at the time, just graduating from college. I was thinking, I'm going to head back to Iowa where I'm originally from, right? Like I'm going to go start an insurance agency down there. Actually, my State Farm agent at the time, he had said, I want you to come work for me. And I said, I don't want to come work for you, but how did you get to where you are? How did you do this?
Okay,
and so then I applied to go to be a State Farm agent, and they said there was an opening in Bismarck, North Dakota at the time. And I said, I've been there once or twice before, but sure, let's go start a business in a town I'm not familiar with. So I actually started my insurance agency out in Bismarck.
Okay, where'd you go to college?
NDSU.
NDSU, yep. Okay.
Went and to NDSU.
And then you went out to Bismarck for insurance. Okay.
Yep.
So talk about how getting started the first couple of years.
Absolutely. I mean, it was like any entrepreneur, they're a grinder, right? So we're early mornings, late nights, you know, and I remember as I was driving to my insurance agency, because I was still learning about insurance, the stuff I was selling. And I'd just pray on my way to the office every single day, like, Lord, please help me. What am I doing here? I have no idea. But you know, just the repetition and putting it in. And really, I knew at the core, it was about helping people. And I care about people and helping people. And so I'm like, I can figure this out. And so I did, right?
So like in the insurance, but did you start with no book of business at all and just built it up? Or did you take over someone's insurance?
Yes. So I inherited a book of business, and out in Bismarck, the last name Richter was a big last name, and I had taken over half of his book of business. And so, and then really most everybody out there were older males, and I was the 23-year-old female. So that
you stuck out like a sore thumb, right?
I stuck out like a sore thumb. Absolutely.
So talk about what's it like. So you take over a book of business, and obviously these clients are used to working with the previous person. What's that experience like in making that transition?
Really, you're building relationships. And, you know, the gentleman that had retired was close to 70 years old. I was 23 years old. Mm-hmm. And typically the book of business mimics how old the agent is,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
So I had to build a lot of credibility. And I remember just wearing a business suit to the office because I wanted to look older than 23 years old.
So I don't think I've ever seen you in a business suit.
I did 20 years ago. I wore business suits.
So give us a little pitch into, you know, what kind of insurance do you focus on?
Primarily auto and home and life insurance. Those are the three segments. People typically will come to us for auto insurance, but we take a comprehensive approach. We do what's called a fact finder, and we figure out what all your assets are that you need to protect. Not necessarily that we need to insure them all, but the biggest risk that somebody has is not having enough liability insurance.
Sure.
It's if somebody has a $500 or $1,000 deductible, sure, that can set you back different, you know, $500 or $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
But not having proper liability and getting sued in a car accident, that's where stuff can be life-changing. So just a, it's not a one size fit all. We really focus on making sure the person and the family is taken care of.
Okay. So let's keep going down the timeline. So you're obviously in Fargo now or in the Fargo area. So what got you here geographically at this point?
Absolutely. So I got recruited to go be a State Farm leadership. So go to work for corporate when I was out in Bismarck. And I was in my agency for 3 years, and they say that they recruit you before you really start making any money.
So why did they come after you?
I was a very high producer, right? Okay. And as you start growing, and I could drive results through my team. I figured out how to drive results through the team. And so when you are in a corporate leadership position, all of these insurance agents are independent contractors. So how do you drive results through other people when you're not technically their boss? Went and worked for corporate for a few years, and that gave me an opportunity to move back to this side of the state. I'm originally from North Central Iowa, so Fargo's a little bit closer to North Central Iowa than Bismarck is,
right?
And had little kids at the time, so it was helpful that I could zip down to Iowa a little bit quicker and did I oversaw the whole eastern side of the state for State Farm agents.
So then. What came after that? Because you're not with corporate anymore.
No, right? I'm not. Yeah. Okay. Really just perspective on life. It was my grandpa was actively farming and had passed away down in North Central Iowa. Mm-hmm. And I was back and forth helping my grandma, and State Farm Corporate had me on an airplane every 2 weeks flying somewhere. My kids were saying, you know, Mom, are you leaving again? And really,
That's tough.
That's super tough. And so just the focus and priority of, at the end of the day, I want to be there for my family. I want to show up for all of my kids' events and be there. So through that, just traveled back and forth to Iowa, and I told State Farm Corporate, I'm like, I'm super grateful for the opportunity and everything that you've blessed me with, to the connections, but I need to go back to State Farm agency where I can be at home at night. And I remember driving back from Iowa and praying, right? Like, what am I supposed to do? God, an agent that had been around for 49 years in Fargo here called me and said, I want you to come over to my house for coffee and cookies. And so
coffee and cookies.
Yeah, that sounds fun. Coffee and cookies. Well, he was 70 some years old, right? He actually recently passed away not too terribly long ago. It was Dean Licken's agency.
Okay.
Went over to his house for coffee and cookies and said, I want to retire. Will you take my agency? And so I called my corporate folks and said, listen, I have an opportunity. Can I do this? So.
Oh, that's awesome. You talked about team and how hard it can be to build team in your business. Can you tell us about your team a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a director of operations, Katie. She's my right-hand person. She keeps us all in line. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness for good people.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And then Carter, he's my director of sales, and he's fantastic. Both of those two really take care of retention and acquisition, bringing people in and keeping them inside of the office. A lot of customers don't realize how much work on the back end is happening sometimes. Mm-hmm. Anna, Lisa, has been with me for a few years, but she'd previously worked as a claims rep for 40 years at State Farm Corporate. So I'm glad to have her helping me and my customers with all of their claims as well, too.
Awesome. So, I wish we could talk real estate the whole show, and we're getting close to break. So I'm going to ask you one kind of final question here to wrap up. So all these years you've been doing, I'm sorry, I keep saying real estate, and I mean to say insurance.
Yeah.
What's been the biggest thing you've learned in the business over the years? Like, what's been the key to success?
Taking care of people. Like, just, I think at 23 years old, my perspective of taking care of people and my perspective now, 20 years later, of taking care of people, I really don't care if someone spends $10 with me or $10,000 mm-hmm. with me. It's, are they protected? Are they taken care of? And I'm going to answer my phone on a Saturday night to take care of somebody mm-hmm. if I need to. So.
And that's why you have 468 Google reviews with a 4.9 rating and higher. That's obviously a reflection of taking care of people.
Thank you.
All right. So we need to go to break. When we come back, I want to talk about, finally, the mistake I keep saying, real estate.
Yeah.
And how you're a developer and investor and kind of what got you into that.
Awesome.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Business Blueprint. Today, I've got my good friend Renee Forte in the studio. And Renee has been in this insurance business for a long time with Renee Forte State Farm. She does many, many other things, which we're going to get to. But the next thing I want to talk about is Renee has been a real estate investor and developer, and I'm really curious to know how she got into that, because it's a lot different than the world of selling insurance. So Renee, why don't you kind of give us some background? How did you get into the world of real estate?
Absolutely. My husband and I, we were moving out to Bismarck to start my insurance agency, and both his sister and my sister needed a place to live. And at the time, he had a twin home. And so we're like, okay, fine, girls, you can pay the mortgage and you can live in this house. And so really we started with one residential twin home and our sisters needing a place to live.
That's how a lot of people start.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's pretty common. So how did it evolve from there?
Really we started buying more residential twin homes. This is 20 years ago, started buying more residential twin homes, and accumulated quite a few of those. And then my husband said, you know, I'm really getting sick of, the calls on toilets and
all the fun things you get to deal with when you do residential real estate.
Yes, right? All the fun stuff. And so getting into commercial just was a natural progression, being a business owner, because I could be the anchor tenant in a building, and we could go from there. And so
was that your first step into the commercial side, was kind of being your own tenant?
It was, yep. And so we built a strip mall and housed my insurance agency inside of it. And
so you built an entire strip mall. You didn't just build an office for Renee 46
I go
Farm.
Big or go home.
So how'd you decide to make that leap? And was that a scary decision to make?
Absolutely, it was. I remember being awake at night wondering, like, oh my goodness, what if you can't fill up these four other tenant spots in a 10,000 square foot building? And so I built that strip mall and housed my insurance agency in it. And I learned a lot of hard lessons, of course, right? Mm-hmm. Going into commercial from residential. But I call them costly education points, right? I'll never do them again, right? Some mistakes I've made that I won't do again.
So. Do you have a mentor in the real estate arena? And like when you were back doing that early, were you figuring it out totally on your own, or did you have someone in your hip pocket helping you out?
I was figuring it out on my own.
Okay.
We had talked to a couple commercial real estate guys in town. But really I was figuring it out on my own, and I'm kind of a numbers geek as well too. So I knew, like, okay, if everything goes south, I'm like, my insurance agency can support this. This is not what I want, but
you know, that reminds me of when I had my father-in-law, Mike Bollinger, on. His word of advice was like, take as much accounting as you can stand.
Yeah.
And 'cause I think that no matter, like in business, if you can always fall back to being a numbers person and knowing the numbers, like you can keep yourself in a, from a train wreck or getting into a bad situation. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Totally agree with that. And so you just run your numbers worst case scenario all the time. And what if stuff is as bad as it can possibly be? And then I make my risk decisions based upon that. But I am innately a risk taker, but that is...
Clearly.
Yes.
Clearly you are.
Yes.
So I want to know, kind of in the early years of getting into real estate, what's the first big ugly lesson you learned or mistake you made that you had to... had to get burned into your brain, right?
I had no idea when you were negotiating leases with tenants on a triple net, how there's a accelerator on your lease rates every single year, and how that ties to the cap rate and your building value, right? And so at the time, I was just like, oh, that sounds good. Like I right? Like I'm like, the numbers work for this, but I didn't realize and understand how important those lease rates were to your building valuation when a cap rate's factored in it. So
yeah, and I think like in any business, you know, and you go and you take risk and you start something, like you're going to make some mistakes and you're going to, I always think the best way to learn from things is you got to make your own mistakes. I think if you're protected too much from making your own, it's almost like being a parent with your kids.
Yeah.
You got to kind of let them make some of their own mistakes. Otherwise they just don't, it's just not as effective when you steer them away from danger. What's your perspective on that as a parent too, with your own kids?
I'll take back to this too, of my parents or being a parent, but really, really in the last few years, I've realized to invest in yourself in education in that real estate world, right? And there's more outside of these this community of Fargo, like expand and meet people all across the country. And so I joined a, it's called Boardroom Mastermind.
Yeah, you were telling me about that a couple weeks ago, and I was very intrigued by that.
And those you go into this into these rooms with people that make everybody look like small fishes because they're doing ginormous projects all across the United States, and the people just pour into you, and you can go there and you can say, here's you're super vulnerable, here's where all my weaknesses are, here's what I don't know anything about, and everybody just pours into you and gives you feedback. It's called a hot seat presentation, and so I have learned so much from so many of those people. Like drinking out of a fire hose, but it's quarterly meetings that I go to. And when you talk about family, my son came with me last time I went down to one of these meetings down in Dallas, and it was called Apprentice a Boardroom. And so my son and daughter both came down, and they sat in a separate room and got to learn everything about Real Estate 101.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was so cool. And
as parents, we need to find ways to educate our kids, you know, to become entrepreneurs. There's not a lot of education for kids. And the best thing you can do is get them into a real situation like that and take them with you. That's awesome.
And he came by, Hayden, my middle son, came back, and he was calculating rate of returns on a local property from the real estate app when we were coming back, and my husband walks in the living room. He's like, oh, no, there's two of you now. Because two number geeks here trying to figure this out. So,
so talk about the importance of networking in the world of real estate in terms of, like, finding deals and even like doing deals with people or by yourself. Like, how is networking and building your network played into that?
Well, I think probably one of my biggest takeaways or learning here recently is understanding what cost segregation is. Mm-hmm. And for example, there's a gentleman that I've become friends with out on the East Coast. Jeff Hyatt is his name. They call him the depreciation doctor. Oh, cool. But it's just about accelerated depreciation on your commercial real estate assets that can provide you more deductions on, for example, my insurance agency as well, too, so that there's so many tax saving strategies, and really that real estate group focuses on the tax saving strategy piece to it.
Well, and that's that's a good example of how trying to figure that out on your own, very difficult endeavor. Yeah. I think you need a good network of people to understand, because it gets pretty deep understanding how all that stuff works and ties together. And you kind of need to be around people that have been there, done that, that can show you the way.
Totally.
Some things you can learn easily by just, you know, Googling or doing your own research, but things like that, you need to have a good network of people around you.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure. I think another big learning that I've had in the last couple of years, too, is understanding how self-directed IRAs work and how people can invest their retirement funds into real estate through self-directed IRAs. And I think everybody thinks when you've got a retirement account, it just needs to be stocks, bonds, mutual funds.
Yeah.
And they don't realize, no, you can take your Roth IRA and your traditional IRA, and you can do other things with it.
So how'd you learn that? Who taught
Again,
you that
through
one?
This Boardroom Same. Mastermind. Okay. Yeah. I mean, just surrounding yourself with people. I always think, you know, when you're in a room, surround yourself with people that are talking about ideas and growing. Don't put yourself in the rooms where people are talking about other people.
There's nothing productive that'll come
there's
out of that.
Nothing yeah. productive that comes yeah. out of
surround,
that.
Surround yourself with good people and you'll go far for sure.
For sure.
Oh, bummer. We have to take another break. This is so sad. All right. So when we come back on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about the meat shop.
Yeah.
I really want to understand what you're doing there and how you decided to get into that. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Business Blueprint, episode 15. I'm your host, Joe Sandine. Today in the studio, we have Renee Forte, State Farm Insurance Agency. She's a real estate investor and developer. And now we're going to move on to, what is this called? Whiskey Barrel Meats. I just learned of this. As long as I've known Renee, I had no idea. Like, she tells me a couple weeks ago about this, and I'm like, what are you talking about? So Where did this idea for Whiskey Barrel Meats come from?
Absolutely. So we are in, my husband and I are developing Maple River Town Square out in Mapleton.
Okay.
And we live north of there on a farm. And so every day when I would come to my insurance agency, I would drive down County Road 11 through Mapleton, and there was a chunk of land that was for sale there. And I told my husband, I said, I could go for a cup of coffee about right here. And that turned into...
So you just saw an open chunk of land and some vision came to you.
It did. It did. Because wow. Mapleton didn't have really a downtown. They didn't have a business district for, you know, your basic needs, so to speak. They had, they have a fantastic commercial, industrial type market out there, but smaller type businesses, they don't have any space for any of that.
So you So you're developing this plot of land. So
yes.
So, curious, how does this play into Whiskey Barrel Meats coming into existence then?
Absolutely. So back in 21, we first built a strip mall out there, and
which you've done before.
Yep, done before.
Okay, so you've got that one checked off the list. All right.
Yep, and inside of that was a coffee shop, a bank from Rugby. They also bought a chunk of land and planning to build a second location out there in Mapleton. And so as I began to develop this, we had people reach out to us and ask us, you know, when's the next spaces coming up? And so how Whiskey Barrel Meats came is there was a gentleman that was interested in, we were going to do a build to suit for him. We were going to build the building for him. Mm-hmm. He was going to lease it from us, right? Very, very common. And in the middle of that, the financing fell through for him. So there's footings in the ground. And could I have made a different decision? Absolutely. But I called a friend of mine and I said, I guess I'm starting a meat shop. Want to come out here and help me? And
So he became your business partner.
He wasn't, or
you took it over.
I just took it over.
Oh,
yep.
Wow. So you took all the risk.
I did. I took all the risk. And but really the, you know, insurance, real estate, the meat shop, it's all about creating experiences for people, because sometimes people are like, how does all of this tie together? And it's like when you come into my insurance agency, what's the experience you create for somebody? And when I look at commercial real estate too, it's what experience you're creating for the tenants and for the consumers that are coming in through those doors. And so I say it literally is the bougiest butcher shop you've ever seen.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
What did Justin have to say about this endeavor?
He's super supportive of his wife.
He is. He really is. I can second that for sure.
He's very supportive. Yep. And he lets me run with my ideas. So I'm super, super grateful.
Good. Yeah. That's good. Okay, so tell us more about the butcher shop. What makes it unique? Get us into the details a little bit.
Well, so you know when you walk into a normal butcher shop and it kind of smells, right? I mean, female.
Like meat.
Like meat, right? But sometimes not good meat, right?
Also, smells like a guy's place.
Smells like a guy's place. So we actually have rosemary piped in through the HVAC system over on the retail side of it so that it smells nice. But really, it's the experience when you walk in. There's what's called a smokehouse lounge that we created. We have a liquor license. And so it's a sip and shop experience. And we have a Buffalo Trace on tap. And
that is the coolest idea.
It is. It's super. But it really was inspired. The whole concept was inspired when Justin and I have traveled overseas to Europe. Mm-hmm. And over in Tallinn, Estonia is probably where a lot of this came from, of just this. You go to the market, you get the stuff that you need, and you go home. And it's a daily habit. It's not like, you know, we go to Costco and we stock up for a week, right? Versus over in Europe, it's more of a market feel. So
that sounds way better, because I go to Costco and stock up and then we forget to use it all. And then we're throwing stuff away that's been in the freezer for 2 years. Oh, I'm terrible at that.
Absolutely.
So you saw this being implemented. So that's kind of where the idea sparked came from. And you're like, we need to bring this here.
Well, just the experience. Yeah. And the gentleman that was planning on building the butcher shop there, he wanted my inspiration and help and what to do with it all. And so I was already going to be the design piece to it. So I mean, I'd already had the vision coming to life of what it was going to look like in there. There's a beautiful mural on the outside of it that was painted by a very, he's actually now the Park Christian School art teacher, He lived in California before. Will Rosenberg is his name.
Okay.
Extremely talented artist, extremely. So he came out there and painted the mural on the side of the building, and it developed characters. And so the pig, the cow, the chicken, they all have character. They all have names and are part of the storyline. So it goes back to this experience when somebody walks into that butcher shop.
Okay, so I'm assuming you're not working the butcher shop every day, right? So you have a general manager running?
Yeah, okay. I'm super grateful. The gentleman that's running the backside of the house, he's a culinary chef, very talented. Mm-hmm. Had previously worked at Fargo Country Club, just a super talented guy. And he runs it out there. And so, you know, I pop in and he'll send me pictures and he'll show me something he made. And so I'm like, sweet, can I taste test this? Right?
Yeah.
So I'll get to taste test stuff as well, too.
Okay. So what have you learned by being an owner-operator of a butcher shop? I mean, getting into the food business, right?
Yeah.
I have zero experience in the food business.
And I did too, right?
Okay.
I did too.
Wow, you are a risk taker.
I am a risk taker, but we can figure anything out, right? You can't train attitude and effort, right? But you can figure really anything else out in this world, right? And so, and it's all about connections and people that you meet. And so, for example, the head chef or head butcher, he'd run a restaurant before. So he knew all this. So yeah, I could lean on him for expertise because I didn't know any of this.
Did you bring him on right away when you opened?
Beginning? He wasn't on right away. No, he came shortly right after we had opened, which this is all about relationships as well, too. He actually lived 1 mile away from us growing up and mowed our lawn when he was a young boy.
No way.
Yes, yes.
Oh, that is funny.
Yep. So just a fantastic kid and just very talented chef.
Okay, so what changed when he got in the mix then? Did he bring a lot of new ideas, help you see what you're doing wrong and fix it? Like, tell us about that a little bit.
I give him really full control of what's going on there, right? I mean, I basically share with him, this is what we have for a budget. This is what we can do with the numbers, and mm-hmm. he creates things from there. And so I'm the business mind behind it. I am definitely not the food person behind it. I'm the business behind it and making sure we have the right people on the bus. And really, with any business, if you've got the right people in place, you can get it done, right? I mean, you know, you've run a very successful business, and it's all about having the right people on the bus.
It totally is. I mean, you can only do so much yourself, and
yes.
You got to empower other great minds to. I've learned so much about just like there's so many more smarter people out there than me,
mm-hmm.
and I want to get them on my team.
Yes,
and be a team together and do great. Yeah, so it is all about bringing people together.
And
for sure.
So many entrepreneurs, I think, get intimidated by bringing somebody on smarter than
mm-hmm.
you,
and it holds you back.
It does.
If you're scared to do that, or you need to get all the credit or whatever you want to call it, it really will hold you back.
Mm-hmm. So hiring somebody that's smarter than you is actually quite smart.
So it's funny you raise chickens at home.
Yeah, we do. We do.
You're in the food business.
I'm just a farm kid.
My wife and I, Renee, invited us out to their pool.
Yeah.
Was it 2 summers ago?
Probably, yeah.
And they were telling us about how they raised chickens and the process of doing the thing that my wife doesn't like to hear about. So you've been in the food business. This is total BS. You're like, you know what you're doing.
I'm just a farm kid that happens to know a few things. But
okay, so do your kids get involved in the meat shop at all?
Yes, my middle son.
Your boy must.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, he loves it.
He likes the chicken thing too.
He does, yep. So my middle son, he calls it the dream team on Saturday mornings. You know, he's only 15 years old, but he loves it. And they cook up stuff, you know, out in the back too. And he's like, I was sampling today, Mom. You need a new spatula back there. And I'm like, you're not supposed to be there sampling. You're supposed to be working when you're there, buddy. So
that's cute.
It is. It is.
All right. Well, time for another break.
Okay.
We are going to get to, though, I think maybe my favorite topic here at the end. We are going to talk about Renee being a licensed pilot and how that fits into the mix. And then we might play a short little game for the first time ever. So we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Business Blueprint. I'm your host, Joe Sandy. And today in the studio, we have Renee Forty, and we've been talking about her State Farm Insurance Agency. We then moved on to her commercial real estate endeavors. We just got done talking about her new meat shop in Mapleton. She is a true entrepreneur. I mean, she's like, she's a risk taker. Her husband can't keep her under control. I can attest to that firsthand. And the last thing we're going to talk about now is Renee's a licensed pilot. So you are like,
I am
living my dream. The only thing that keeps me from not, I've told you this, not becoming a pilot is my wife says she'll never fly in a plane with me. So
I'll talk Tony into
this. You need to work on it a little bit more. But okay, Renee, how did flying become a part of your life?
Absolutely. So in high school, I wanted to be a pilot. And
you did?
I did. Wow. I wanted to be a pilot in high school. And, you know, I just, the commercial pilot or aviation, you're not home very much, right? You're constantly traveling. Yeah. And so I got to a point in my life, I always joke, don't get me bored, I'll start something new, which you can obviously see, right? I went up to Fargo Jet Center a couple years ago, and I went for a discovery flight, and I was like, I'm going to learn this. This is hard. This is a challenge. The amount of people that are pilots is so slim, right? Mm-hmm. And I love challenges. I like to stretch myself and grow. And so don't get me wrong. I mean, I would take off when I was learning. And you need to have a lot of right rudder when you take off. I might geek out on some aviation terms.
That's fine. That's fine. You do that.
But you need a lot of right rudder when you take off. But my right leg would like start twitching, like nervous twitch when I take off. And I'm like, I can fly this plane. I'm okay. So, but now I got my private pilots in 24, my instrument rating in 25.
And so this is pretty fresh.
It is. It's been a couple of years, but I love it. And it's what I love about it is I get up in the air and I forget about every single thing that's on the ground because you're just focused on everything happening in the plane. And safety is such a priority that I'm constantly checking everything and scanning my view. So
it seems like flying gives you kind of an opportunity to just kind of be in your own space. And what has it meant for your life in general to be a pilot, just to as an entrepreneur?
It's super peaceful. Yeah, it's super peaceful. It actually reminds me a lot growing up when my dad would stick me out in the field to field cultivate, and I'd have to sit there for hours, and all we had was AM radio. And so I would sit there for hours in listening to the radio, and it's therapeutic, right, to just go back and forth in the rows when you're farming. But up in the air, you know, I don't have to do straight lines. I can do a little bit. I can go all over.
So when I think of becoming a pilot, I jump straight to the, okay, at some point you have to do your first solo flight.
Yeah.
So what was that like? Talk about that.
It was actually on my birthday. It was.
Oh,
yep.
Wow.
It was on my 41st birthday that I did my first solo flight. And, you know, went up and did the flight, and I came back down, and, you know, I'm taxiing back to the Fargo Jet Center, and I'm like, I can't believe I just did this. I just flew an airplane by myself. My husband, my best friend, my kids were all there to welcome me off the plane when I landed. And I mean, I'm not going to lie. There was like a thank goodness I didn't die, you know, when you do your first solo flight. But
does it feel a lot different than having your instructor there right next to you?
It does, because it was a safety net. And so I put my flight bag actually in the seat to my right when I did my first, to just have something there in that seat to the right, because my flight instructor wasn't there. But I love it. I learned something new. And the flight instructors that I had up at Fargo Jet Center were amazing as well, too.
So you're busy, really busy. How do you, timing-wise, how do you manage being a pilot and putting yourself in the air enough to keep your skills up? That's got to be a tough thing to manage.
When I was doing my training, a lot of it was right away in the morning. The skies are a lot calmer right away in the morning too. Mm-hmm. And so I could leave the house at, you know, 6 o'clock and go for a 6:30 flight. And typically a lesson is 2 hours or less. And so I'd be done by 8:30, and I could be to my insurance agency, you know, by 9 o'clock in the morning. And so that's how I was able to do my training. Or at nighttime, the skies are also a lot calmer as well, too. It's during the middle of the day that there's typically more turbulence, right? Mm-hmm. Winds are calmer as well. So
how much do you fly just on a regular basis now?
Well, yesterday I went up to just get more proficient with my instrument. So I did a couple approaches in Fargo and went over in Moorhead. And it really is important. There's a difference between staying current and staying proficient. I want to stay proficient. So flying enough so that I feel safe and comfortable, you know, continuing to go up as well.
I remember you telling me once when we were visiting how, you know, if you haven't flown for a while, you can get a little fuzzy on, you know, the details and stuff. So it shows how important it is to keep that rhythm of flying.
It is. And there's checklists, right? Following mm-hmm. the checklist. But I think just continually going up and flying, then it all comes back to you like riding a bike. Like there had been a stint mm-hmm. where I hadn't flown for a few months when I was transitioning into a different plane. And it did. It felt like riding a bike after I got back up, but I still make sure I went with somebody, of course, yeah. when it'd been 3 months. So,
being a pilot, you said obviously safety is a huge concern. There's checklists, there's procedures. It's a very dialed in thing, right?
It is.
How has that changed how you just approach business then? Has it changed the way you think about your agency or the butcher shop or real estate as far as like your preparedness and your detail and that kind of stuff? Has it impacted you across the board like that?
I don't know if it really has impacted me in business wise, but it's mm-hmm. been, this calming, piece to like when you're a business owner, you can probably attest, like typically when something's getting rolled up to me, there's a fire happening. Mm-hmm. Right. And yep. so we put out a lot of fires as business owners. And so when you get to go up in the plane, you can't reach me, right? Like there's yeah. no fires. And yeah, I mean, typically my flights are under 2 hours of where I've gone. The plane that I fly is little. Like, I think it's funny. Some people think when you're a pilot, like you start in these jets and you're flying these jets. And I'm like, mm-hmm. no, that's not how that works. Not how that works.
Well, we're running low on time. I want to ask you just kind of to top it all off. So looking ahead, what excites you about business, life, everything right now in the next couple of years? What do you got cooking?
I've got another strip mall. I'm currently in the architecture planning stage of right now. And so I just love, I can see the vision of how that all looks. So that's coming up in the future here. So
how about your family? What's going on with your family?
My daughter plays competitive basketball and
she does. She's very good.
Yeah, thank you.
She's very good.
So she's being recruited by a couple different colleges right now. So that's on the horizon. And that's what's at. And then my son, or my two boys after that as well, too. They're busy with stuff all the time.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Renee, we're out of time. Unfortunately, I could go a whole nother hour. I would love that. But Renee Forty, thank you for joining us today. Just really quickly, if you want to see any of our past episodes, visit businessblueprintshow.com. And then Renee's website, reneeforty.com for her State Farm Insurance Agency. And then whiskeybarrelmeats.com. Check them out and go have some bourbon. It would sound like a really fun experience. That's all the time we have. See you next time.